They claimed that they saw nothing on these monitors, but I read their records, and in fact, one monitor in the northwest quadrant, which is exactly where the wind patterns would have driven the worst of the radiation, did show excess radiation. And you know what they did? They went in and they said, well, it must have been a defective monitor. And they called it the Northwest Anomaly.
What's wrong?
I need something stronger.
Take 4 red capsules. In 10 minutes, take 2 more. Help is on the way.
You take the red pill. You stay in Wonderland. And I show you how deep the rabbit hole goes.
Hello, my name's Matt, and I'm a PhD in nuclear engineering. And I was wondering, you mentioned the importance of low-carbon energy to the world's future. Can you take a couple minutes to talk about the role of nuclear power to provide that energy, given that you're investing in nuclear reactor designs through TIER Power?
Well, the energy problem's one of these incredible problems, but I love nuclear. It does this radiation thing is tricky, but nuclear in some ways is the coolest of all because you put the plant near the demand. The crazy group I'm backing, we use U-238, depleted uranium. And because we have fast neutrons, we have this neutron budget that's very different. Now, our main problem is a material science problem, is these damn neutrons degrade the cladding and everything, and we don't have a predictable way of saying, you know, over a 40-year lifetime, how various materials deal with that.
With foolish dreams and dark desires, it don't take much to tangle entire worlds. We're just like little kids with big ideas. When our lives are uninspired, we'll book the next best thing for hire. And for a little while, we believe it's going to free us.
Consumer activist Ralph Nader.
Now, if you sit back in a detached mode and you try to understand the pro-nuclear position or the pro-atomic power position, and you do it with great distance and detachment and objectivity, you can modestly conclude that the pro-nuclear powers, in terms of government regulators and their apologists, are suffering from what can be clinically called professional insanity. Professional insanity. Now, unnecessary, too costly, too dangerous, and destructive in terms of future generations. What can you possibly call the forces who support that? There's no other way but to call them professionally insane. Now, I have never even called General Motors professionally insane. This is a very serious scenario here.
Can't think small, but I love nuclear.
But he doesn't recall, no. And I know a guy who's cuddling slow, and all that he knows is he'll never let go. His baby is gone, only he doesn't.
I know it's been long assumed that those who champion the environment are opposed to nuclear power. The fact is, even though we've not broken ground on a new power plant, new nuclear power plant in 30 years, nuclear energy remains our largest source of fuel that produces no carbon emissions. To meet our growing energy needs and prevent the worst consequences of climate change, we'll need to increase our supply of nuclear power.
When our lives are uninspired, we'll cling to what has got us mired. And for a little while, we believe it's going to free us. Worlds never do collide, our walls never are open wide enough to search the other for a hole. To bridge the gulf between you and I, tentative truthful words must first combine and touch the ragged edges of our souls.
have that feeling where you're not sure if you're awake or still dreaming.
And then there's the claim that nuclear power is needed to deal with the greenhouse effect. Energy analyst Amory Lovins.
Nuclear power makes global warming worse because it's a very expensive source of energy. When you buy something expensive, you don't get much energy per dollar, so you can't reduce coal burning and global warming much for that dollar. If you spend the dollar instead on something cheap like efficiency, you get a lot more energy for your dollar. That's what cheap means. So you displace more coal burning and global warming for that dollar. When, therefore, you spend a dollar on nuclear power instead of efficiency, that is, on an expensive thing instead of a cheap thing, you're unnecessarily releasing into the air a lot of extra carbon that you wouldn't have released if you'd done the cheapest thing first. Now, if the only alternatives available were nuclear and coal plants, then it would be correct that nuclear is less bad for global warming than coal. But those are not the only two alternatives. There are at least three major categories and several minor ones that are cheaper. The three major ones are efficiency, renewables, and advanced gas technologies, any of which will reduce global warming more than nuclear will, and therefore in comparison to the best buys, nuclear power makes global warming worse.
For the greenhouse effect, the number one issue is you don't replace one environmental disaster with another.
A new landmark rises at Pleasanton as power from a pioneer source begins to flood through the countryside.
I know a little bit about a lot of things, but I don't know enough about you. Just when I think you're mine, you try a different line. And baby, what can I do? I read the latest news, no buttons on my shoes. But baby, I'm confused about you. You've got me in a spin. Oh, what a stew I'm in. 'Cause I don't know enough about you.
100 years ago, just 3 human generations ago, when radiation was first discovered, we didn't understand that it was very dangerous, but we noticed that it can be useful, and we started to work with it. Radiation is a sort of energy which can penetrate deep into your body and harm your health. But it is an invisible danger. We have no sense for it. You cannot see it, feel it, or smell it. And still, it may even kill you. Radiation then can be described as small packages of energy. And when they hit the genetic code, the DNA molecule, they can break it, split it. If you have a very, very serious whole body exposure, you don't feel anything until 1 hour or so afterwards, where you start to feel nausea and you may vomit. And you may think you have got a food poisoning. And in between you may feel better, but only after 2 weeks you start to bleed, you have diarrhea and fever. And if after a few weeks you may even die from this. Radiation can also leave a trace in you. It can change the genes, mutate the genes. It will cause malformation or disease or dysfunction. So beware. Never stay in an area with an enhanced radiation level, and never ever touch upon a strong radiation source.
Welcome to the real world.
The wind shifted. Back in the 50s, particles drifted, a wave set in motion, the Pacific Ocean, test of the hydrogen bomb, they're from, we come too close to home, ships on the test put to rest and convalesce, with heavily armed guard, in Hunter's Point shipyard,
Heavy metal sandblast, face mask deoxidized. Remove the radiation from the outside. A hazardous cargo dumped into the harbor, went farther than that though. Sand from the blasting made into sidewalks. Played on by kids that just got over chicken box. Knowing faces, all races, hopscotch, bare feet. On Geiger counter concrete. Mother prepares a fruit salad treat to eat. Sprayed with messed up pesticides. None have been tested for health effects on the side. Medical, race, and social statistics. As everyday life become a health risk. Well, medical, race, and social statistics. Does everyday life become a health risk?
What most people don't know about Three Mile Island is that in the licensing, we were prohibited from even considering severe accidents. Accidents that would be worse than the safety systems were designed to withstand. Quite literally, any accident that exceeded the capability of safety systems of the plant was excluded from discussion in the license proceedings because the NRC ruled arbitrarily that it was too improbable, so it was beyond the scope of the proceeding.
Another thing that's important about Three Mile Island is to recognize that accident started in what the nuclear industry and the spokespeople for the NRC like to call the non-nuclear part of the plant. There is no non-nuclear part of the plant in the sense of what's important to the safety of a nuclear power plant.
In the aftermath of the accident at Three Mile Island, the world understood that severe accidents not only could happen but do.
The nuclear industry are pushing nuclear power on the basis of three myths. First is the claim that so-called inherently safe nuclear plants are coming. That, says nuclear engineer Robert Pollard of the Union of Concerned Scientists, is false.
There's no such thing as an inherently safe reactor. Every reactor has so much intensely radioactive material in it that by no means could you call it inherently safe. It might be possible to try and improve the safety features to compensate for the inherent danger, but even then, it could not be called inherently safe.
What are the sort of accidents that can occur in these new so-called inherently safe advanced reactors?
Well, you have still the fundamental same problem as you do with existing reactors, namely that the fuel contains an immense quantity of radioactive material. And so all you're really talking about is a reduced probability of an accident involving melting or damage to the fuel which releases that radioactive material. So really, in the sense, the only advancement is in some of these is a reduced probability of that accident happening.
Indeed, the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission's own advisory committee on reactor safeguards acknowledges that the supposedly inherently safe nuclear plants are not inherently safe.
Out on the highway, like a creature from another time. It inspires the baby's questions. What's that? For their mothers as they ride. But no one stopped to think about the babies. How they would survive. And we were almost lost Detroit this time. How would we ever get over losing our minds? miles from Detroit. There stands a giant power station. It ticks each night as the city sleeps. Seconds from annihilation. But no one stopped to think about the people, or how they would survive. And we almost lost Detroit this time. How would we ever get over?
When people say, therefore, well, of course, we could go nuclear because France and Taiwan did, I think the correct answer is, we are Americans, we have chosen to live here, not in France or Taiwan, because we place a much higher value on markets and democracy. If you're saying we need to give up those things to have nuclear power, let's be explicit about it so we can decide whether that's really what we want to do and is it worth it.
And it's the argument that's made by some proponents that if we standardize nuclear plants in this country, if we took other steps to make more efficient the nuclear power system, things would be better. Your reply?
They might be cheaper. They might work better. Then again, they might not. We might do what France did and standardize in some defects so all their plants crack in the same way. But standardization and streamlined licensing, sacrificing accountability again, and other such, messing around with the arrangement of the deck chairs on the Titanic, will not help this industry. It's suffering the greatest collapse of any enterprise in industrial history. It will be lucky to achieve a few percent of the size that was rather recently officially forecast for it. The only question in most countries is how fast will the existing plants be phased out, not will more be built. None of this fiddling with little details around the edges like standardization and licensing and waste management is going to overcome what's fundamentally over a 20-fold cost disadvantage against its major competitor.
And the major competitor would be?
Efficiency.
And the technology is here for efficiency.
Technology is all on the market.
The sheriff of Monroe County had a show enough disasters on his mind. And what would Karen Silkwood say to you if she was still alive? That when it comes to people's safety, money wins out every time. And we've almost lost Detroit. Detroit, that time, almost lost Detroit, that time, and how will we ever get over? The odds are we're gonna lose somewhere, one time. Uh-huh.
put a door down this street, and this street is, I mean, there is Three Mile Island right there, and there's Unit 1 in operation with the steam coming out. And you found cancer up and down the street, you said?
Right.
Every other house?
Right, yeah. Sometimes, some of them were two in a row.
Really?
Yeah, we used a medical history sheet that Dr. Carl Johnson helped us with so that we could ask the proper questions. We tried to find out if they were contacted by the health department, many of which were never contacted. We found out whether they evacuated, and if they did evacuate, where they evacuated, how long, when they came back, all of that.
Jane Lee found in her door-to-door monitoring this 600% increase in cancer from before and after the accident. Do the people here think that this evident increase is connected to Three Mile Island?
Well, you know, it's pretty quiet now. As I think Jane can understand. She probably knows this, too. It's they don't talk as much anymore about it. But I think it's on everybody's mind when there's cancer and so forth. I you know, someone dies, I think TMI's brought up right away.
Yeah.
I think it is up here in the hill, I know. Because we've had we had a lot of deaths up here.
And the likelihood of a severe core melt? The nuclear industry used to claim that getting killed in a nuclear plant accident was somewhat like getting hit on the head by a meteor when crossing the street. But in 1985, the NRC acknowledged to Congress that the likelihood of a severe core meltdown in a U.S. nuclear plant in the following 20 years was but 45%. Indeed, this report goes on that figure might be off by 5%, that the odds, in fact, of a nuclear plant disaster in the U.S. are but 50-50.
We don't need nuclear power now. We never have needed, and we never will need it. But the point is, how do we convince the people who are supposed to be running this country that the public doesn't want it before it's too late?
On November 13, 1974, Karen Silkwood, an employee at an Oklahoma nuclear facility, was on her way to meet with a reporter from the New York Times. She never got there.
Cancer are not writing poems, praying in California sun, holistic healers, never happening, losing breasts to the ready knife, and bravely getting tattooed on the spot, while hearty, dark-eyed friends, remembering grandmother, pray, no harm will come to you, no harm will come to urine-sodden sheets and 80 pounds at the end of your life.
80 to 90% of all cancers are produced by environmental pollutants. They're preventable. I've said that. It's no use treating cancer once it occurs. It's too late. Have you ever seen a person die of cancer? Have you ever seen a child come into a hospital with some bruises? Have a blood picture done, got leukemia, put in a little room all by himself, treated with nasty drugs, make him feel sick? His parents can't see him unless they wear a mask and a gown. He lies in a state of abject terror while everyone smiles at him. And 2 weeks later, in the middle of the night, he dies, bleeding from his mouth, nose, and rectum.
It was disclosed today that the recent accident at Three Mile Island was not caused by human hair, as was originally suspected, but in fact by equipment malfunction.
The Nuclear Regulatory Commission today said that human error, was a major factor, but a congressional task force looking into the accident claims that equipment failure played an even bigger role.
People dying of cancer are not writing letters to congressmen or to you, not marching, not shouting, not bombing, not rebelling, not shaking their fists in the pestilent air. Heartless, inviolate, the pestilent air disguised as a lover plants its insidious caress on grandmothers, lovers, California, Oklahoma, is really a rapist. The air invades lung, liver, cervix, breast, bladder, while the muse recoils in dizzy horror, and hardy dark-eyed poets tear their own hair.
Einstein predicted that this would happen. He said, "I wish I'd been a locksmith," when he discovered the theory of relativity. We're the curators of life on Earth, and we hold it in the palm of our hand. And if we proceed with nuclear power and nuclear weapons, we're going to wipe off humanity from the face of the Earth. The ultimate in preventive medicine is to eliminate nuclear power and nuclear weapons.
Director Peter Behuth.
And it's been nothing but trouble. It's been nothing but death. It's been nothing but effects on people's health. It's been nothing but a waste of hundreds of billions of dollars in tax money. And it hasn't provided us any real security, either militarily or in terms of energy security. It's got to stop.
Why doesn't it die?
Why doesn't it die? Yeah. There's too much behind it. There's too much business as usual. There's too much money pushing it.
For people to kill it, then, what will it take?
There's going to have to be a vision in people's mind as to what the future is going to be. We have to visualize. Listen, the nuclear industry has a vision for what they want, and they act on it. We have got to develop a vision for what we want and act on it. And that's going to take a concerted effort and a coalition with a lot of people that are affected by this, people that are affected by the waste, people that are affected by the DOE plants, people that are affected because so much money is going to this industry instead of real social needs like education and homes, poverty, the drug problem. You know, these are social justice issues, and until we build coalitions of people that are affected by those things, we probably won't be successful.
Because if we don't, it's quite likely that there will not be conditions on Earth in another 10 years that will support life. And the most subtle threat of all is man-made ionizing radiation from nuclear weapons and nuclear power plants. That is enemy number one. It isn't the greenhouse effect, or trash, or garbage, or toxic waste, or the heating of the environment. It is the slow, creeping levels of radioactivity.